If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Not much exciting today. Chill show. Just discussing with you guys. We are awaiting the result of the Shiloh Hendrix trial. Last news is that 3 hours ago, her jury went into deliberation. 15 minutes ago, Tom Hennessy updated that they are still waiting to get the results. So 3 hours approximately of deliberations for the jury. So it was for this Spark event where Shiloh Hendrix had used a slur. And it was all caused by a troublemaker who wanted to get her on camera. So there was an event where a young kid who's apparently so troubled that he has to wear an ankle monitor. So you got this black kid walking around, not an adult, a young kid who has been judged such a danger to society and himself that he must walk around with the ankle monitor. And of course, what happens? This young boy seeds trouble, apparently tries to look into the purse of Shiloh Hendrix. Shiloh Hendrix makes an offhand comment. That is what is claimed. I don't even know that she has acknowledged this in the trial, because apparently the guy who was supposed to be the main witness is not even in the US anymore. So all of this holds for a troublemaker who is not even a witness, but who decided to pull a cell phone to film her. So after this supposed or alleged offhand comment, which we don't even know if it happened, but he pops the cell phone and starts saying, "Did you say that word? Did you say that word?" And please say that word, say it again so I can film you. And at some point, when you are in front of such a provocation of someone who wants trouble, clearly, and who wants to get you on the record saying something, there is such a thing as bravado. And it's like, oh yeah, you want me to say a word? I'll just say it. And that's exactly what we can see happened on the video. At some point, Shiloh Hendrix got tired of being taunted. Say that word. At some point, you're like, all right, well, you have repeatedly requested that I say that word. Therefore, it wouldn't be a public trouble if I just acquiesced to your request. But you want the trouble. You want to induce me to say it so you can get me on camera, because you think it's going to lead to some national campaign against me. Well, the national campaign did happen, but it turned very much in the favor of Shiloh Hendrix, because she ended up making a GoFundMe, a GiveSendGo, that worked very well for her, and she ended up being able to escape the environment where she used to live, so she can now be in a safer place. She can now be in a safer place and continuing to live with her family. What an amazing woman. And she stands there in absolute beauty. It's great to see just a beautiful Shiloh Hendrix, who's a mom of, who knows, 2-3 babies, with her husband at home caring for the babies. And hopefully, I hope that the jury will just see this. And so apparently, so there's basically two sets of charges. There's having said the word allegedly on a non-filmed context, about a child in a park. I don't know that the First Amendment should cover this. I mean, you can have the opinion that a child is acting in a way that deserves a slur. That is absolutely protected by the First Amendment. In fact, the First Amendment covers so much more than this, so much worse than this. And then the second charge would be saying the slur in response to a guy filming you, taunting you to say it. I believe in both cases, there is absolutely no ground to find her guilty. That being said, she might still be found guilty because we're in a Minnesota jury. And who knows? Who knows who's on those juries? If she was to be found guilty, I hope that it gets escalated to appeals court and Supreme Court, because this is absolute nonsense. This wouldn't have even been a question 20 years ago. But you have these states who are intentionally designing their laws to be circumventing the First Amendment, to be working around it and making less and less acts of speech legal. Because when you look at the laws that they are invoking, let's see here, I add it here. Well, now I lost it. But it is a set of things that say if you say something publicly that tends to create anger, disturbance, and one prong of this law has already been found unconstitutional. But you can see that the law has been written in not around the action that you commit, but around the reaction of the people. And that is a no-no. That should not exist in America. People are responsible for their reaction. If I say something that makes you angry, your anger is on you. If you do something wrong motivated by your anger, I'm not the one who's at fault here. You have reacted to something I said. I'm only responsible for my words and whether they are protected under the First Amendment, and that's a very broad protection. I'm not responsible for the feelings evoked in you. USPP4YM says, JF, I'm going to ask a multi-part chat in the chat, but pay once, so please only read once. It's all there, or it won't make sense. Absolutely. Don't hesitate to send me, and if it's too long, you can even send me an email. I'm willing to answer a long story, no problem. Doubting Thomas says, JF, is adult males obsessed with toys/anime an example of Goodhart's law missignaling being a fun, playful father? Ah, that is interesting. So let's... Your question is short, but it invokes so many theoretical entities. I'm not Grok. I have to process this. So Goodhart's law. Goodhart's law is everything that will one day be used, everything that is at first used as a measure or as a proxy for being indicative of something else will one day lose its status as a measure because it will be subject to parasitism and exploitation. So let me ground my brain into this. Okay, so one example of Goodhart's law would be I measure your grades at school. That makes you a good employee. But then I do this for 50 years, and eventually the people who have good grades in 50 years are not good employees because they just grade maxed. So that's Goodhart law. Now you say, adult males being obsessed with toys and anime, would they be Goodhart's law missignaling being a fun, playful father? I think there are conditions under which that's a viable theory, but we would need much more information about what is the true why are men interested in toy and anime? And unfortunately for this theory, if men are interested in toy and anime because it's a misfiring of something else, then I'm not sure that being interested in toy and anime is a sexual signal. That's the problem. If it was, then absolutely any sexual signal could be subjected to abuse, and eventually the measure doesn't work anymore. Just like the peacocks. You have these tails that are developing. Eventually, it might be the case that some peacocks find a way to produce the tail in a way that's not costly at all. And in fact, it just becomes fluff. Any sexual signal can be subject to this. I don't think we're there, though, because I'm not fully sure that the anime toy collector artist is sending a sexual signal. Arguably, he's not. Or maybe he's looking for these specialized artist girls who are into it, in which case they might be actually cognitively filtering the girl. There may be such a thing as this. See, if you over-signal with the intent of selecting the woman who will be attracted in you. That is absolutely possible. So if I want a geeky woman, or if my genes want this for some reason, perhaps just displaying geeky behavior might be to my advantage. So those are viable hypotheses, but down the line, it boils down to the question, what are people doing when they buy toys and anime and they get into these geeky things? Perhaps, in my view, I think the base hypothesis could be that they are over-firing on some advantage of specialized knowledge. So perhaps nature wants you to be obsessed so you can become a baker, so you can become a good chef or whatever. And then sometimes nature overdrives, misfires, and makes you an artist in a completely useless domain that will actually just lead you to drain yourself out of money. That's how I see it for now. In the absence of evidence, I think that could be the default hypothesis. End of the line, Joel says, the U.S. Constitution is always subverted by individual states. The right to bear arms is very restricted in New York, for example. Absolutely. And I don't know how you deal with this, because the bandwidth of the Supreme Court is just not there. The Supreme Court is no more there to defend the everyday people of America. And we are stuck with our local jurisdictions hitting on us. And it takes 20, 50 years to get an actual constitution-violating law to actually stop that law in the Supreme Court, when the state is really dedicated to messing with you. 311SC sends a super chat. Thank you very much for the donation. He says, Jeff, I recently had a life-changing psilocybin experience. I think it could change the game with mental health. Do you have any experience with or opinions about the compound? Yeah, I do. I personally don't think it's something. It's something I don't recommend, certainly. The problem is that it messes with your mind, and it makes you see things that you shouldn't see, hallucinations that are meaningless down the line. But a lot of people get out of the experience with this kind of, oh, I have seen things. And the fact is, you've seen delusions. That's what you've seen. Now, there is some scientific work being done in various countries where they hope that this kind of shock that it gives to your psyche, that it will improve some things like depression, that somehow you'll be in such a state of, oh, that after that just one use would fix something like depression. I don't think that the evidence is super strong, although you have big fans of the approach that will tell you, oh yeah, it's starting to cure depression. I don't think the full cycle of scientific evidence has been gathered, because here's the problem. Okay, it's super easy. You set up 30 people. They all have depression. You give psilocybin to 15 of them. You don't give psilocybin to 15 others. And then, of course, they come back 1 month later and they've been traumatized by this experience. They're like, I'm doing so much better now. But you've kind of, it's like at some point that you have to wonder, if I had hit them in the chest with a hammer, would I have had the same result? Like, maybe, I don't know. The problem is when you induce a shock to someone, they might report temporary fixes, they might feel better, just the kind of testosterone, adrenaline hit that you've given to the system will change so many things. But down the line, you haven't asked yourself, if we do this all the time, on average, 1 year later, 10 years later, do we have more problems or less problems? That's a different question, because you don't know. I mean, if you start making these drugs circulate more, you don't know what it leads to down the line. You don't know if the people will use the psilocybin as a gateway drug, maybe to get down to marijuana. And now, people have one or two experiences of psilocybin, but down the line, they're more cognitively open to taking marijuana, and then they ruin their lives by becoming lazy marijuana smokers. The variables are so immense, it's very hard for me to believe just on the basis of, oh, people have self-reported 1 month later that they're doing better. I don't like these things. And in general, you know, I'm happy for you if you're happy. I don't care. But I don't recommend it population-wide. It's not something that's worth doing. Parnabe Bruto says, my cousin started to microdose a few years ago after therapy in hopes it would fix him. He ended up going from woman 10 years younger to woman 10 years older than him. Yeah, you never know the blind spots that drugs will create on your brain. So it may, you know, you may feel one way. How you feel doesn't matter, though. Nature is there to catch you. And it's all about your measured performance at the end. Are you making babies? Because drugs will have this effect where you don't care about anything anymore. You are much less focused. You are much less capable of saying, oh, yeah. It's super easy to cradle yourself in the delusion that you have reached happiness. Because drugs, that's all they do. They focus you on the experiential side of existence. Now, the experiential side of existence is worth zero. It is an absolute loss of your time. You can feel happy up to your death, and you will have achieved nothing. You will have no babies. You will not have engaged with the world. This pure happiness is a virtual experience, just like what drugs provide. And your brain cannot have evolved to properly handle this. Of course, it's drifting your brain away from what it should be paying attention to. Wasp has sent a $10 super chat. Thank you very much for the donation. He says, my wife keeps threatening to divorce me. I want to ask about how I should plan this. Keep everything cool, then bring the news from a position of strength. She will threaten, then get sweet again. I'm tired of it. Yeah, that is a difficult situation to be in. It depends on how much leverage you have here. But let me open up some avenues for you. So first, are you safe in your house? Like, can she do something? The first thing to, if you are legitimately in your house and it's not a house that she has like in her name or that she would solely control or that she would be able to evict you from, then the first physical thing you need to do is be set in your house and clearly there and don't give her any chance to change the locks or to evict you in some form or to go to a court and argue that you've abandoned the house. So that means even if she tells you, we're now divorced, you still stay there physically. You don't go to an apartment and to leave her the space or whatever. No, no. If she wants to divorce, it's on her and it will be at her cost. So that is the first thing you need to do. Second thing, start accumulating property in a way that she can't get access to, and she cannot start accumulating even calories. I remember there were some women in my life, they would ask for donuts. They would ask for a box of 12 donuts. They were thin like this. They would ask for boxes of 12 donuts when they were getting ready to leave. They were getting ready to get the caloric jump to allow them to leave and destroy the family. So be greedy. Be greedy. All of the money you can, you put it in a personal account of yours. You can even have a face display with her where, okay, you can encourage her with small amounts of money meant to buy essential stuff like food, but it doesn't go above this. Any sort of power or loose on the money, you drain to yourself and you act like it doesn't exist, or you remain shadowy about what is the current state of finances of the family. Now, that doesn't mean to completely abandon her, because some women will threaten and they will be ready to stay. It depends on their situation. It depends whether they've really thought through what it is to be surviving out there in an apartment. The other question is children. If you have children currently, that complicates any divorce story, and you need to ensure that she doesn't have a single occasion to kidnap them and go out with them. That means essentially, unfortunately, and it depends if you have a job or not. If you have a job, you basically cannot do that. If you don't have a job or you work from home, it means 24/7 on surveillance of the children. That is, there's not a second in the day where she can take the children, bring them outside, and then initiate the divorce proceedings. One way you can accomplish this is cameras also, so you can see when she plans or does this. So those are the basic physical protection. And as far as if she becomes extremely hostile or she puts you in a situation of physical danger or massive emotional threats of the kind where she becomes so uninjurable that it's dangerous for your mental health, I recommend the building of a part of the house where she doesn't have access, like a bedroom that you have with your computer, with everything you need to do. So something that you can lock. So if she becomes extremely annoying or violent, you always have a place to withdraw to. Those are the physical safety bases. And also the protection against potential dirty moves against you. Now, as far as the relationship goes with her, you have to determine how much leverage you have and how much that could work. But my first direction that I would recommend to you is impose a new rule in the home that there are no more threats of divorce. Because it's unviable to have this Damocles sword hanging onto a couple's head. And Dr. Phil, you know, has this policy with his wife that there cannot be any discussion of separation or even implication of divorce or separation. Because once a woman starts asking about these things, she's done. She's already with her foot out of the door. If you truly believe that there is a chance for this relationship to continue and that she could walk back on her current state, you're going to have to impose an absolute rule on this, that there is no discussion of divorce. You explain this that way to her. The moment you divorce, I am no more a person in your life. You put your foot out the door. Whatever you can carry with you, you go on the streets with it. That is a divorce. There is no reason to engage on how a divorce would look like, other than putting me in a mental state that will create nervousness, that will create bad faith, that will create paranoia in the couple. So from now on, you guide her toward either that's the choice you make, and then that's your thing to deal with. I don't have to give you a pamphlet on, so you want to divorce me? Here's the info on what happens. I don't have the responsibility to provide you a pamphlet on life without me, because life without me is without me. Wasp says he gives us more details about the situation. He says, no children, separate financial assets. I just share the same bed. She will keep me up at night. I work night shifts. I live in apartment. She will threaten to stop taking meds. I could move to dad's house. Well, I mean, at that level, I was studying all sorts of possibilities of your current situation, but so your current situation is very much not entangled. So you're not entangled with her. That reduces my counseling to you to a core minimum. And the core minimum is as follows. It makes your decision much more easy. So your decision space then is as simple as this. Is insemination possible now? And is it easier to do it with her now than it would be to go to your dad's house, restart the dating search, find another woman, and then come inside of her? That's the question you have to resolve. Because down the line, what's happening here is that this woman is probably unfit mentally for being a long-term partner of yours. So then the question is, can you get a baby inside of her before the inevitable crash of your relationship? And do you want that baby? So that's the question. Now, the question then becomes, what is your quality on the dating market? If you're a financially stable young man, beautiful, with solid attributes that make you desirable on the market, however, be careful. Some people overestimate their value. But if you are in a very, very good market situation, then everything else becomes more tempting. But don't mistake. Dating is hard. Dating is hard for anyone, even a Giga Chad. Even a Giga Chad, it's hard to date. So don't make a mistake there. Measure the insemination space of probability. How much work is it on this kidzo girlfriend of yours who wakes you up at night to have a baby? Are you willing to do that work, or does that work seem more easy on the dating side? I don't know the answer to this, because I don't know in what kind of mental distress she is putting you, just how hard is she putting you down in life. And know that if you are married, that will give you a divorce paper. And let me tell you, finding a new woman once you have a divorce paper and she asks about it and you get to marry her, and then she goes insane because you've already been married. Women have this reaction. Oh, you've already been married? It's like, yeah, bitch, have you looked around? Divorce is endemic. So yeah, I've been married 1,000 times. So just know all this. And the question is it possible to get to a baby with this woman before she blows up? I think it might be. I think it might be. But if you choose the dating path, then, okay, you have a dream. She doesn't fit your ideal. You go out there. You face the music of the game and its difficulties. That's one decision. You might do it. I will give you a little guide if you choose the first path, which is insemination. I want you from now on to understand that you have power. So right now, she's probably been victimizing you with psychological abuse of the worst kind for I don't know how many years. Maybe one, maybe five. Your life changes tomorrow. Don't change it right now. Don't change it tonight. Tonight, you go to work or you go to bed, whatever you have to do. And I want you to sleep on it and accumulate a power ball. Just like an anime character. And tomorrow, you're going to be like, don't hit her. Don't hit her. But you're going to be projecting your ball of power that you will have accumulated. Here's what your ball of power should be. From now on, you are the arbiter of everything that happens in your home. One. Two. From now on, she will not have behaviors that are meant to create distress, abuse, emotional breakage, or to reduce you to lower than the value you estimate yourself at. No more. Not tolerated. And whenever she does these things, you don't hit her. You don't even threaten or build anything. You look at her and you say, that is unacceptable behavior. As your husband, I demand that you change your behavior. I will not stand and be abused in this way. So learn how to use the power of words to make her feel really, really bad about how she is, how she's behaving. And, you know, maybe she's too stubborn and she's going to continue doing it. Learn not to escalate this into any sort of physical conflict. And because you have now the new power of your locked door, you can absolutely withdraw from an escalating situation. But you always escalate within the word domain. You talk as if you were the leader of this home. And no, that is unacceptable behavior. I do not accept this. This is abuse that you're doing right now. I will not let you continue doing this. And you have the power of withdrawal. And when she starts banging on the door, she has no power to open that door. So you let her live with herself if she stubbornly pursues harassment behavior toward you. And you start guiding her in life where you invest words, only words, to explain to her, no, that is a boundary that you should not cross. And it has to be tight. She cannot talk about divorce anymore. She can only be throwing you flowers on making the couple happy. She can only be positive about the outlook going forward. She can only talk about building the family better, getting to babies quicker, that kind of positive stuff. Any trace of negativity or psychosis, you put your hand on the table and you say, I don't accept this. I want you to change your behavior right now. Now, I know it wasn't in my instinct to do these things when I was young, but eventually I understood. We're faced with a retarded population. They have to be trained like monkeys. So train her like a monkey. Don't invest too much emotions or too much hope that it will work. But you can absolutely improve your everyday life right now. And if you choose to go the path of trying to inseminate this hopeless case, do it. Do it that way. Where you put super strong boundaries about violating your happiness. And you say that is how it works in that house. And it doesn't matter, by the way, if the apartment is co-signed by her. Or from now on, you are the leader and the god of this house. And you speak like it and you act like it. That is what I would tell you. I would try path one. I would try path one to see if you can get a pregnancy within the month. Because down the line, it's a shot. Are you going to have a solid girlfriend 1 month down the line? I don't think so. And if you are in reproductive mode anyways, she will also soften up because a lot of women, they deploy crazy behavior as a strategy because their genes are saying, like, you're not pregnant. You have to do something about me. Rudolph continues with more information. She threatened to have me arrested for stealing her laptop. A lie. And lied about domestic violence. But now she wants to have me over to film a cam show for money online. What is your advice? Oh, well. Now you're talking about a OnlyFans whore. Now, that is another category, my bro. That is another category. So then you have to estimate, well, if she's into sexual exploitation of this kind, I guess she's on all sorts of birth pill and crap like this, and she's not gonna give you a baby. So the question is still, can you get a baby in her quick or not? I don't think you can. Because these sexual, OnlyFans type women, they are heavily equipped on anti-natalist strategies. So down the line, it boils down to, will she have your baby soon? Soon enough that she's worth a shot rather than going for another woman. But if you're dealing with a OnlyFans whore or someone who's... Okay, no, that's a different guy. Okay. Okay, so then if these are different guys, I will finish my address to Wasp first. And then I will address your stuff, Rudolph. Wasp says, I have girls at work interested in me. She's threatening, unaliving. I had to bake her, act her. I'm not as attractive physically, but I'm 30 and could get back into shape. I've cheated on her. She's ungrateful for making her stable. Oh, yeah. A woman will never be grateful for making her stable because they don't even have a concept of stable. So then let me finish my counseling to you, Wasp. At 30, you are at a point where it's within the possible to date, but it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy if you don't look super attractive physically on top of it. That is not a position of mega power. It's not a position where you should dismiss wholesale the idea of staying with her. But now we're talking about an absolute mad, insane woman threatened to unalive, and you bake her, act her, so you sent her to psychiatry. So that broke a lot of trust and confidence within the couple. My advice to you would be, see if you can attempt a last month of absolute imposition over our behavior. Just absolute control. Don't let her get away with a single thing, and be sure that you establish just what is the timeline here. Can you get a baby inside this woman within 1-2 months? Or is that out of the question? Is she so much on anti-natalist stuff that it would take a lot of time to get her off of this? In any case, what you have to do is the path to baby. The path to baby must be on a timeline. What are we talking about? Once this is on a timeline, then you have a basis of decision. So if, for example, you think, well, we're not getting a baby within the next year with this girl, so you have to endure a girl for 1 year without any form of commitment to pregnancy. And then perhaps you can think, well, you know, my coworker could get me to a baby in 6 months. And then you have a basis of decision. But without that basis, it's going to be hard. You have to know what is the timeline with this crazy Baker Act woman. Now, she's not to be abandoned necessarily, because maybe that's your best shot. In any case, build all parallel ways in a way that will make your work easier. So you say you could get back into shape. Get back into shape no matter what. Get back into shape, So you have more options, so you have more leverage both on her and potential new dates. Get back into shape. You know, concentrate like you're Rocky training and you're going for the baby. Just don't even think about your current girlfriend or wife. She's just maybe an obstacle, maybe a collaborator in the process. But you're developing abs. And you're now a giga chad of the house where she doesn't get to do anything. As soon as you see a little bit of pathological behavior, stop it there. You do not do this to me. And women are kind of responsive, at least temporarily. I'm not saying it's going to fix our insanity, but just build a whole behavioral program of boundaries around her. And just go ahead and take all the shots you can. And if she's on anything that makes the baby making impossible or difficult for now, just impose an end to this. You say, I want this marriage to be producing babies. I'm not seeing you very motivated. I'm asking right now that you stop the birth pill, that we get into baby making. We're losing our time right now. And you make sure that whatever time you decide to still invest on her is time where you're not being emotionally crumbled into nothingness. Be an absolute boss going forward. She cannot do a single thing, because I know how they do. They will try to get under the radar of whatever boundary you install it. Your radar has to be detective, and you have to detect any sort of little implications or word that she's trying to viciously insert. And no, that is unacceptable. The smaller things you react to in imposing your boundaries, the more she will just give up at some point. Because at some point she will know, oh, okay, if I get super crazy, then certainly he's going to detect this. But if you don't let her have one single negative word in the entire day, she will realize that her entire existence is in depression and psychosis. That basically she has to just shut up 24/7. And hopefully she can build something, a more positive outlook on life and perhaps a more positive life between the two of you. We have USPP4YM that has sent an email super chat. Thank you very much for the donation. He says, Jeff, I may have failed to inseminate. I recently met a crazy 20-year-old girl of the internet who I met. The day went well, but that evening, by text, she demanded I give up masturbation altogether. She was DTF and to be inseminated down the line and already had one kid. But I am unwilling to give up masturbation. I said so, and she ended it. I know a lot of people think masturbation is bad, but for me, if you don't use it, you lose it. And losing it would be a huge problem. However, in the big picture, while she had problems, at the end of the day, I may have failed at what may be my only chance for insemination. It has certainly been my only chance so far. I guess my question is, should I have just went along with what I think are kooky and bizarre demands and her checkered past if it meant insemination, or should I have standards? By the way, she was genuinely quite crazy. I won't go into it, but her father is trans, so it's quite messed up. A second question. Your opinion on masturbation, generally, is it bad? She claimed no ejaculations for 1 month led to thicker and more viral sperm. I didn't believe this, and quick search with results such as WebMD and WikiHow said thicker sperm is worse. Who is right and who is wrong here? Should I have bit the bullet and followed her demands? Should we inseminate crazies if we have no other option? Well, okay. Thank you very much for the question. By the way, this is all true. I know this because I've seen these girls before. So, yes, this... I know the kind of girl you just met. This happened to me before. There are women who make obsessions about, oh, you were in the shower for 3 minutes. you've probably masturbated. I want you to take your shower with the door open so I can supervise that you're not masturbating. And yeah, those are insane women. So they are basically red flagging themselves and showing to you, look, life with this woman, she is a hyper control freak. It's going to be insane living with her. Now, the general theoretical stance is, yes, you should inseminate if that's all you can have. But perhaps your situation is not disparate, USPP4YM. You've learned a little bit from that, and you've made a decision that led you down the path of now you have to find another woman. That's fine. You're going to have to rotate through hundreds of them before it works anyway. So get used to it. A woman loss is not... you shouldn't be like, oh no, I have lost my only chance at inseminating. No, no. Probabilistically, you may have actually speeded up your access to insemination, because with a crazy woman like this, you don't know. You may not have had a child within the next 5 years, and then she goes crazy with you in 5 years from now. She's lost your 5 years. You've become sterile. And now she drops you under the bus because she makes a paranoid conclusion that maybe you masturbated once in the shower. US says, how can you get squeamish about bodily function? We discuss insemination regularly here, bro. Yeah, so if you're not into this, just leave. So let's establish what is your current situation. So in general, should you aim for insemination? Yes, but that doesn't mean all efforts are worth it with what you're faced with. Here you were faced with a woman where you don't know if you're going to have a baby from her in a month, in a year. You made a decision based on the early signs you were getting from her that your decision is not particularly bad. Clearly, she probably has massive psychiatric issues, and she already has a child. So the problem with women who already have a child is that you don't know how quick they're willing to lay it down and say, all right, we're making the next baby. Now, if that promise comes within a month, then sure, she's worth something. But perhaps a lot of women who already have their children, they have it in their mind, I don't want any more children. I just want a stepfather who will come, and I will deceive him into thinking that maybe there's a baby chance, but there's none. So you're dealing with a woman who has leverage. When you're dealing with a woman who already has a baby, unfortunately, that may be the end of her plan. You may be on her agenda marked as never going to have a baby with him, but he could be a good stepfather. Or you could be just comforting me emotionally and be my boy toy. So all in all, you've made a call, and stand by this call, bro. Stand by this call. You always make a call on probabilities, and the probabilities with this woman were not particularly good. However, in general, if I was to tell you, in general, for what's to come, for a future woman, or even going back with her, you want to go that way. If she has these bizarre demands, just don't tell her, oh no, I insist on masturbating. First, masturbation is your private life, not of our business. There's always time where you could masturbate in secret. In general, if she comes with a demand like this, you just say, oh, I don't masturbate. I'm totally fine not masturbating. If she has any value. If she has any value, you say, okay, I'm totally fine not masturbating. But you also note in your log of her, you note, well, control freak, possible psychosis, possible massive psychiatric disorders. But you don't, in general, if you're on the quest of insemination, no matter what, you don't want to put up anything much as deal breakers when it doesn't matter. Now, the deal breakers, they must be things that will actually impede on your ability to, you know, to have a happy life and be a father. So the deal breakers are things that they're trying to get you embroiled in that would remove your leverage. Like, oh, how about you come live in my house and I get you away from all your family and I'm around all my family. So when I divorce you, I can fuck you up. That kind of thing are the kind of deal breakers that are life-changing so much that you can break a deal on this. Something like masturbation is not a deal breaker because you can actually just lie to her. You can say, I'm not masturbating, and that's it. Now, on your more physical question, is masturbation wrong? No, I don't think it is. What about thicker sperm? Well, there is such a thing as you will see that sperm is less efficient if you come twice in 6 hours. That is true. But it's not true that sperm is more efficient if you accumulate 1 month. So the window where sperm is actually liquidy because you've come too many times, that's about maybe 3, 6 hours, 12 hours. But by the next day, you are fully replenished. Now, if you wait months or a month, this is the scale of time at which this thickerness is actually starting to be less good for the sperm quality. So in general, the sweet spot is actually 1 or 2 insemination per day. That is the best chance, where the sperm is the highest quality and where the frequency is high enough to get a baby. The delusions that she has about the reasons for it don't matter, because down the line, you are in an interpersonal dealing here. Down the line, what you have to make as a decision is, okay, we have a crazy here. How do I manage this crazy? And the way you can have managed it, in your case, you decided to withdraw. Now, you could actually go back to her and say, no, I realize that you are absolutely wrong. You are absolutely right, darling. It is better that I invest the maximum energy that I can to solely inseminating you. And I promise to you that I will not masturbate anymore. However, I would like to ask you that you do your share in this. I feel that having sex in a woman who is on the birth pill or with a condom is like masturbation, isn't it, after all? And therefore, I would like to ask that I will not masturbate, but I want our sex to be useful. I want you to show that you have a respect for my sperm by not leading me to ejaculate into a dead hand. And therefore, I ask that we have regular sex and that we have regular sex for the purpose of reproduction and that you are not under any birth pill, birth control pill, or any sort of condoms or whatever. And if you are willing to do that, I will come back to you and I will promise you that on my side, all sex that we will have will be together. So that's how I would approach it. Now, that's if you want to return with her. I don't think that your situation is desperate either to go for the rest of the market and just try. I think the two paths for you are on the fence. Just keep going and it's going to work at some point. Wasp adds to his earlier narrative. He says, I think I'm going to demand children before ring next time. What a waste of my best years. I feel like life is in limbo. There's nothing left to do. Video games, food, theme park, movies, all of it feels so dull. I don't care if I die. I don't know. Yeah, I think your situation is not desperate, but yes, you lost a lot of time for all this. So yes, demand babies. And, you know, people say, oh, JF, it's kind of weird. It's socially awkward. Yeah, well, I don't care. I don't care. You're not going to have things in this life if you don't demand them and make them explicit. So yes, absolutely demand baby, both from her and from future females. There shouldn't be anything. You should estimate that as long as she's not pregnant, you are entitled to absolute polygamy of whatever choice, you know, absolute dating anyone and weighing your options and you can just tell her, as long as there's not a timeline on which we have a baby, there's no couple, there's no, we're not together really. We can hang out, you can decide whether you want to be with me, I can give you information, we can have we can go eat ice cream. But down the line, we are in a monogamous relationship when you're on the reproductive track and when I know the baby is coming at that point. Now, if that point is in 5 years from now, that's too much. If that point is in 6 months from now, maybe that makes sense. Nicholas says, if you haven't tried abstaining from masturbation for a week or a month or two, give it a shot. You most likely won't lose it. Oh, yeah, it's absolutely feasible to not masturbate. Okay, so now we are going to the other series of super chats. Thank you very much, all of you, for your generosity. I now want to answer Rudolph. So let's have a read. You said ask anything. So why won't you debate the Ralph mail? He has a woman who wants to talk to you about your book. She threatened to have me arrested for stealing her laptop. A lie and lied about domestic violence. But now she wants to have me over to film a cam show for money online. What is your advice? Okay, well then, I thought you were asking a general question about cam whores. But now you're asking a specific question, making claims about Ethan Ralph and some woman who wants to talk to me about my book. I don't know who you're talking about, and I don't know about all of your claims. So to go back to your initial question, why don't I want to speak with Ethan Ralph? Because Ethan Ralph is making false allegations about me. And once you make false allegations about me that Papa Jeff knows are false, you are eliminated from existence. You do not exist anymore. Poof! You do not exist from the bubble of existence of Papa JF. And Ethan Ralph has for many years hatefully pursued the publication of false statements about me. So once you fall for this, you can get your rise, you can get your attention that you're gonna farm for these lies, but it's gonna fade away at some point. And at some point, all there will be left is Papa JF. And you won't be able to engage with Papa JF because Papa JF remembers every person who lied about him. And Papa JF blocks you, and you don't exist anymore. That's the trade-off that you need to do. When you wait, am I going to publish a lie about Papa JF? Once you publish the lie, it's over forever until you die. And then when you die, I will engage with you. I will write an obituary that explains to the world for the rest of existence how useless of a sewer rat you were onto the internet. Ray J says, Ralph doesn't hate you, just does it for entertainment. It's not about hatred. Who the fuck are you guys, by the way? I'm starting to get audiences that are retarded. Where are you coming from, guys? Because I've been a streamer for 11 years, okay? And you guys are fucking noobs. To come here and talk to me about emotions? He doesn't hate you. Are you woman or what the fuck is happening? Ray JJ, who are you? Where do you come from? Are you a woman or a man? You're talking to me about emotions? Did I mention anything about emotions? I wonder what is the feeling in the heart of this person who lies about me. I wonder if they truly feel the lie. I wonder if deep inside they may not feel that way. Have I ever spoken like this? No. Why? Because no one gives a shit what you feel. No one gives a shit what a bunch of random monkeys and what's happening exactly in their brain and how the monkeys are organized in the barrel of their cranium. Doesn't matter at all what people feel. All that matters to Papa JF is what they do. It's all that matters. I'm an ethologist. I don't care what they think. I don't care. All of your feelings will be abolished once you die. There will be nothing left of them. Maybe some of your actions will be left. Maybe. USPP4YM says, why would JF even do that? He doesn't need, plus won't get clicks or money from it. What's the point? Absolutely. He keeps going. This guy has understood nothing. This guy didn't understand what I just said. He says, Ralph respects you. You need to let him in your heart. Okay, at this point, I'm banning you. I'm banning you for over-emotionality. There are people, they will never understand. They will just never understand. They live in the space of female narratives. It's like, well, this person feels that way. They said this, but they feel in some other way. You've already fallen for the female, for the matriarchy, if you do this. Because if you let a single elbow of freedom between what people do and what they feel, then suddenly you have these all, oh, well, I did it, but I didn't mean it. Oh, well, he did kill someone, but he wasn't able to conceive of the murder, and so it's kind of okay, and we're going to get him in a psychiatric hospital instead of a prison. So no, you won't ever understand the world if you keep functioning in emotion. I'm trying to refresh to see if the Shiloh... So jury question, an update in the trial of Shiloh Hendricks. The jury is still in the deliberation, but they have now come out to ask for a question. The highlighted jury question, well, that's speculation about what could be the question of the jury. So at this point, we have a jury that is asking questions and clarifications to the judge. That is the current setting. That is the current situation with the Shiloh Hendricks trial. Polly Marquette reports, Swedish Viking Center claims that a replica ship used in Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey was returned damaged, and Universal still owes $6,000 for repairs. Okay. They're waiting for their $6,000 to be paid for ship reparation. Trump close to ordering a massive attack greater than anything before on Iran. Trump escalates warnings of massive attack. Trump threatened to hold Iran responsible for future Houthi attacks and said he is close to ordering a massive new strike, according to an Axios interview. Yeah, I think there are two possibilities with Trump in terms of when he would do this. He can do it pre-fall, so you know, in line with the midterms, where he would want to position the country into a war stance to perhaps foment some patriotic vote. Or he could wait and do it after, where he would basically do his signature move of the end of his presidency would be, I've escalated the Iran war to whatever scale he wants to escalate it. That is possible. It's also possible that he waits maybe for the last year of his presidency, where he would just finalize his presidency with a massive strike or maybe even control of Iran. And I am therefore, I'm very worried that Trump is not done crashing the economy. That would be my my position right now. I am worried that Trump is not satisfied by just how much he crashed the economy, and he may just want to do it more. Meanwhile, we have four House Republicans who have broken ranks to help Democrats pass Iran War Powers Resolution. So it's a war resolution that is meant to limit what Trump can do in terms of war with Iran. But these resolutions don't have much value. So I'm not sure that it will even pass the Senate first. So it has passed the House for now. But typically these resolutions don't have much value, because the president can always argue, I'm not making war, I am just reacting to defend the safety. It's a matter of national security. And they get to basically start wars no matter what the Congress says. So I don't think it's particularly meaningful, this vote, but that's the current situation. Chip Walker says, was your Odyssey review parody? No, it wasn't. People think like, oh, so Jeff is, are you telling us that we have to play 6D chess and interpret this movie as right wing, even if it's not right wing? No. I'm telling you, you can always overlay a series of different lens onto an artistic product first. So there is not a unique solution to saying, is this movie liberal, or is this movie right-wing, or is this movie good for us politically? There's always a set of lens, and you can put that lens or that lens, and sometimes the lens can be contradictory. So you can say, for example, well, it's a DEI movie because there's DEI actors. Okay. Plausible. Possible overlap. Possible application of this framework. Now, yesterday, I did my own review of Odyssey, and I say, you know what? It's a movie that tells us in modern America, we are about to undergo late Bronze Age collapse, and it has to do, whether civilization survives and goes anywhere has very much to do with woman. That's another framework that you can superimpose on the movie. Now, my framework may be at conflict with alternative framework. You could say, well, how can it be this if it's DEI? Well, it's neither DEI nor this. I'm just saying you can lay this over it. Now, when you can lay a radical, quite based statement over any Hollywood movie, it is a victory that should be celebrated. Because, and I've received a lot of hate. I'm surprised about how just reviewing the Odyssey yesterday has puffed up all sorts of rats of the internet coming and saying, no, Jeff, no, so bad, that's not true. We're talking about art analysis, you fucking idiots. It's not true. It's art analysis first. So first, the question is not whether it's true or not true. The question is, can you superimpose this framework over this movie? And then you can have all sorts of trade-offs and say, oh, well, I prefer Matt Walsh's interpretation that it's DEI. But the thing is, if you're going to complain about DEI, okay, like I'm not for DEI. But you do realize that if you're going to take issue with all movies that do DEI, that's effectively all movies forever. Until the end of time, you have reduced art analysis to, has it been produced? Because of course, any movie that will be produced in Hollywood that will deserve a critique these days and for the next 100 years are going to have all sorts of diversity in them. And what's your project you want to make historical movies unfilmable? So for example, in 100 years from now, when when white people are 10% of the American population. You don't want us to be able to film a movie at all because it's all going to be DEI, right? It's not sustainable to say I'm going to be an art critic who will just basically complain about DEI forever until the inevitable conclusion that white people will be reduced to a minority population will be achieved. And then what? Then does it become DEI to hire white people? Now, that's a big question. In 100 years from now, when white people are 10% of the population, is it now DEI to film The Odyssey with white people only? Or do we want an all-black Odyssey? I don't know. But my point is, art is always a dirty game that you can pull from the limits of the world around you. Art can stem if a bunch of teenagers buy a Logitech Brio camera and start filming stuff with it. And there will be limits. Maybe the sound will not be good. Maybe a low-budget film will not be able to have good angles and good decisions made in the editing and production. But they might be able to pull some art, because art is always born within the limits and constraints of the production circumstances. Now, the production circumstances of Hollywood are, okay, that there is either a social pressure or even some rules that are literally imposed by the Oscar or whatever. Whatever it is, that the set of things that force DEI to be the case in Hollywood. Maybe they exist. But in any case, art remains this thing. Art remains what can you do within the constraints of the system you're given. And that's true if you're a teenager with a Logitech Brio camera, or if you're Christopher Nolan with an army of DEI employees and DEI-respecting systems. Down the line, it's what can you do with the constraints you have. Now, my claim about The Odyssey is that Christopher Nolan, stuck in whatever system he is stuck to film this film, has succeeded at using the constraints he was in to insert a Trojan horse in the very system that you complain about. He has designed a piece of art that can be plausibly explained as a Trojan horse against feminism. That literally says, this movie literally says, the instability of woman and the false traps of woman meant to misguide you toward the OnlyFans sirens and the druggy calypso are civilizationally destructive. And the only way civilization survives is if women and men get together in a unified and solid way. And they can then carry civilization wherever it can survive, away from parasitism. The fact that Nolan has taken whatever constraint he was stuck in and has made a movie that can have this interpretation to it, even if it could have other interpretation. The simple fact that this was allowed to be part of the possible interpretation in a plausible way makes it a massive movie. It's very important. Because let me tell you, the feminist system that is controlling Hollywood right now, they won't let much things like this pass. They'll see it. The Trojan horse had to be beautiful. The Trojan horse of Nolan had to be well painted. And sure, if it takes a couple of secondary actors being hired to pass as DEI, sure, do put that butter on. Do butter that horse as much as you can, Nolan. You have free rein as far as I'm concerned. Because you have just put a detonating... You have just inserted a Trojan horse into feminism. That is beautiful. And that is now on the record. There's no way they can back out. There's no way now that the left can say, oh, well, now that we understand the film, it's kind of right-wing and it's kind of anti-feminist. No, no. Now it's on the record. And not only this, Nolan was successful at getting all of these leftist and feminist commentators to clap. They clapped at the Trojan horse of Nolan. That is art. That is beautiful. And yes, I stand by it. Doesn't matter whether there's there is someone is black in the movie. Oh. Are we, like, if you're going to be a Puritan, what is your proposed path to making an Odyssey that is pearly white? Who's going to fund this? Where will these studios be built? Where will that happen? What's the plan here? Or we're just not going to do it anymore? We're not going to do the Odyssey? So then we're going to cut ourselves from producing art because you don't want to see a single black or Asian or Indian guy in a movie? So you want to limit the non-whites to working at McDonald's? Is that the plan? You want to create an underclass in Hollywood? Because the reality of America right now, even I, as a pro-white person, will tell you, I'm much more pro-white, by the way, than Matt Walsh. But even I, as a pro-white person, will tell you, you now live with brown people, and you're going to have to make some negotiations. To me, it's unreal that you have these center-right people who have been to my left for their whole life. But now they're demanding purity on this. We want an absolutely white Odyssey. Even I don't care about this all that much. By the way, the history of theatrical performance as precedence of people playing roles that are outside of the boundaries of their biological reality. There is such a thing in theater as, oh, well, okay, we're going to have a male actor play a female. Or, you know, and the problem is that the modern world, with all the trends and all the DEI precisely, has made this a sensitive issue. But 100 years ago, you may not have cared if an actor who's actually outstanding in their performance can play some role better for something that they're not. Like, by the way, if you had a movie about a welder, let's call it The Welder. So I'm a director. I'm making a long epic about the welder. The man couldn't miss a single weld. I mean, he would just get his torch out, put his mask down, and the weld would be perfect. Now, imagine that I go out there and I hire an actor, but the actor isn't a welder. Oh, it's like, I don't know. I don't know if this guy can play my welder correctly. How much welding have you done in your life? Zero welding? You can't act in The Welder if you haven't weld at least 1,000 different pipes. I'm looking for a movie that truly communicates the art of welding. I'm looking for someone who will be able to just weld directly on camera in a realistic way. Plapides says, JF, so no, you wouldn't demand that a welder, that a literal welder must act the welder. So in the same way, there is a way in which you can think of a brown actor that could be performing a role within a play that is not brown. It's possible. Of course, visually, it's offsetting. It's there's a cost to it from the audience engagement perspective. But as long as Nolan's point was not, this is a proper reconstitution of the Odyssey, which, by the way, is a story to begin with. It's not a scientific document, the Odyssey. By the way, there's a fucking Cyclop. We're talking about a fantastic poem here with Cyclopes and giants and sirens. Sirens don't exist, by the way. So if sirens don't exist, does it really matter whether there's a handful of brown people on a boat? Since these events that you see in the Odyssey did not physically happen. There's no sirens. So yes, there were no brown people maybe on your boat in Messina, but there's also no sirens. So don't take things too literally. And in the end, judge a piece of art by its use and what you can see in it. And it is my position that the DEI aspects of this movie are minimal, endurable, and that they have not tinted the final function of the Odyssey in the view of Nolan, which is here we have a 2026 piece of art that is heat hero as fuck, and I welcome it. Onyx Rock says, following the sheep into the cave of Polyphemus reminds me of following the Paschal lamb to the cross. You are right about the Christian symbols. I hadn't thought about this even, but that would be a further argument that Christopher Nolan is hinting to us. I'm talking about Christianity. USPP4YM says, Elon literally said that he would fund a based version of the Odyssey or anything else. Yeah, and that's nonsense. The Elon version of the Odyssey will suck. There's no way you can honor a classic, by the way, better than by refusing to reframe it as the classic. There's no way you can honor the Odyssey better than by saying, I'm actually going to make a statement about America with it. That is so much more powerful. So any attempt that you do at making the Odyssey Elon Musk will fail. Because it will be boring. It will be, here's how it would have been. Here's how it would have been thought of in the head of Homer. No one gives a shit. No one gives a shit about how Homer actually perceived this thing. Because even if you were to show me accurately how Homer thought of it, that would still be less emotionally evocative to a modern person than to actually tell the modern person, I'm going to make you feel it. Because the way Homer thought of the sirens doesn't really matter. What matters is how can this film interface with you in a way that you can feel what the sirens down the line were truly about. And the reality is you probably would get a better feel of what the sirens are truly about if we literally were not calling them sirens in the Odyssey and we were calling them only fan whores. Now, if the sirens of the Odyssey were actually a self-service computer giving you access to a series of OnlyFans whores with whom you could DM, and they would ruin your life as you get attracted to their DM, their song, you probably would feel the essence of the Odyssey better than if I get a girl with a fucking fish tail to her. Sometimes the emotional interface allows you to connect more than even the proper representation of what was originally intended. The interface is everything. USPP4YM says, if there's one or two non-whites, it's fine, okay. But every commercial, every character, come on. Well, I made my case yesterday about this. To the extent that Nolan wants to make a statement about modern America, then is it an artistic blockade to have something that looks like modern America? I mean, Nolan gave you as much as he could possibly give you. He gave you the fact that the two heroes are Penelope and Matt Damon, and they are both white as fuck. And they're the only heroes. They're what survives from Greek culture that will eventually build into Roman culture and then Western Europe and then America. So, in a way, this movie is actually as much as you could within Hollywood talking to you about the legitimacy of white flight. You want more than this? You want white exclusivity? But the thing is, white exclusivity would have made a worse movie. White exclusivity would have deluded you into thinking, oh, this is what happened in Greece. Ah, this has no relevance at all to America. Whereas this movie is telling you there will be a very small elite contingent of America that will successfully flee on a boat and continue bearing the torch of civilization. And it will be a white man and a white woman. And you're not happy with this?